Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for January 15th, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes at Stuart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. Also, Todd Gleason talks with University of Illinois Department of Agricultural and Consumer Economics Professor Gary Schnicke about coverage levels for revenue protection in 2014. And meteorologist Drew Lerner will give us the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Let's go ahead and see how futures settled on this Wednesday afternoon. Hard red May wheat, 617 and a half, down 11 and a quarter. The July contract, 615 and a half, down 11 and three quarters. Soft May wheat, 574 and three quarters, down 11 and a half. July, 581 and a quarter, down 12. March corn, 425 and three quarters, down 5 and three quarters. July, 440 and a half, down 5 and three quarters. December, 451 and a quarter, down 4 and three quarters. March soybeans, 1318, up 11. July, 1281 and a quarter, up 8 and a half. November at 1118, down 1 and a half. March soybean meal, 434.50, up 440. March soybean oil, 37.99, up 23. February live cattle, 139.92 and a half. It's up 227 and a half. That's the last trade. A February last trade for lean hogs at 86.57 and a half, up 57 and one half.
Support comes from Country Financial. Country Financial is hosting farm information sessions throughout Illinois from December to March. Topics include updates to the federal crop insurance program, the farm bill, and how to use grain marketing and crop insurance together to manage risk. Registration information is on their crop update website at countrycrop.com/update.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says three waves of cold will move through the eastern U.S. during the coming week to 10 days. Temperatures in the Midwest and eastern states will not be as cold as those of last week, at least not through the next 7 days. Some colder conditions are possible thereafter. Dry weather will continue in the western half of the U.S. throughout this coming week, with temperatures notably warm. Most of the U.S. hard red winter wheat region will be dry over the coming week, with warm temperatures reducing winter hardiness. Net drying is expected. River ice on the middle Mississippi and Illinois rivers remain, although it did break up a bit during the weekend when the warmer temperatures were in the region. Meanwhile, weather systems moving across Argentina late this coming weekend and through next week should bring some needed relief to some of Argentina's driest areas.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Jackie.
Oh, good afternoon, Dave.
Looks like spreading was a feature today with perhaps the buying of beans and the selling of corn.
Certainly, and the very same time, you know. So spreading is really common, especially in markets where nobody has great confidence on the direction of the market. I think everybody's waiting basically to, you know, see what the export sales are going to say tomorrow and, you know, can we sell corn at this level?
And export sales does seem to be a hinge pin for the trade on the balance of the week.
It does, and you know, there's a good possibility that we really won't see the impact of the higher prices on corn until next week. So, you know, we did get some sales to China last week Friday before the report came out, and so that could give us a halfway decent report tomorrow. We really don't know, but I think it's a big, big part of it. You know, the question that everybody's, you know, looking at is can we actually expect to sell enough corn to make up for where we are as far as the carryout goes?
Well, I do know that ethanol is still profitable.
Boy, it sure is. I'll tell you, we did get the ethanol report out today. We were 10.7% less than a year ago as far as last week's grind goes. We need 94.4 million bushels a week to get to that 4.95. You know, the USDA just raised that by 50 million last Friday. And, you know, I don't doubt that we can get there. You look at the ratio between the two, and it's 1.44 arbrop to ethanol. That just says that there's no reason for them to stop producing.
Meanwhile, on the technical side, if you are wanting to be a bull, you're not getting much.
You know, you're getting very little. We saw the March corn contract actually close below the or right at the 10-week moving average. It tested the 10-day, and it bounced off, so it's kind of sideways. You know, the cash average, that cash index that Minneapolis always had together, mm-hmm. shows cash average out of the 2,000 different facilities at 412. These closed below the 10-day. And then tested the 10-week, you know, tried to test overhead resistance, and it failed there, too. So I think, you know, when you look at the range, Dave, it's probably 350 to 550 on Dece, and we're in the middle. So, you know, I think that in some areas we've seen some pretty good basis, which is really kind of surprising. So someone that hasn't done anything at all, they could entertain selling it and maybe re-owning it with a short-dated call.
Is there the possibility that corn will stay modestly firm on ideas that weather in Argentina might not be beneficial to corn grown there, and the fact that they're seeming to have issues once again? Seems like we say this almost every year, but financial issues.
Oh, my gosh, yes. You know, when you looked at ConAb, is what really kind of killed us today. They came out and they raised the Brazilian corn crop. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you dig in deeper, what they didn't do is they didn't make any adjustments to the Safrina corn numbers. They just used last year's corn numbers. And generally, when you read about the private pundits down there, they believe that there's going to be a lot less Safrina corn planted. And so I do think, you know, and there are pockets down in Brazil right now and Argentina both that are extremely dry. So it doesn't make for a good situation at all. You know, the financial thing when it comes to Argentina, oh, my goodness. I think that that's one of the things that may support beans down the road, even though we saw them raise the expected Brazilian crop to 91.3 million metric tons, is that I think we'll see strikes again in Argentina. There's just no money there to give those people the kind of increases in wages that the union workers on the docks are going to want. And will that 91.3 million really come out? I don't know. We got 20 to 25% of the crop right now is dry and stressed, and you know we're filling pods down there. So it's a big guess at this point in time.
Meanwhile, soybeans performed well. If you want to be on the bullish track, nothing there to dissuade one from thinking that March might not go up and test where January went off the board at 1339.
Yep, 1339. I think that, you know, that is certainly the question that's on the mind of traders and any kind of speculator who's out there. Again, today it was supported by the fact that China came in and bought 106,000 metric tons of beans, but they were for next year. They weren't for this year, mm-hmm. and that's why I don't think we saw the big response. We saw a response to it, and then it kind of died down. I think that supported the November beans. NOPA crush, however, did support nearby. They had a little over 165 million bushels. That was very, very strong and much higher than last month and much higher than October. So I think, you know, like we talked this morning in the, you know, on the show, that soy meal demand that's coming out of China for aquaculture is really, really pushing the soy meal demand side of it. And so I expect that the crush is going to continue to stay pretty strong for a while yet.
Yeah, this morning, if you recall, I had a few questions about livestock highlighting the upside potential. It was one of those days I was looking at the marketplace and thinking, man, this thing really could go. And boy, did it ever.
Yeah, I think one of the, you know, the three-letter word, wow, that's it. When you look at the cattle market, that's where it's at. We actually did see some light trade out in Kansas at 141. That's a record.
Mm.
And they didn't make any sales at that. So at this point in time, the ask is 142. So we'll see once what happens. That market is being, it's acting in a way that is outside of what you would consider to be the norm. I believe we have speculators in the market, but we all, and that's being supported by the fact that the cutout prices have been higher. Now today they actually published the select and the choice cutout prices. Choice was at 123, select was at 121. When you look at the choice select ratio being at 1.69, that does not argue for a higher price in this marketplace. So obviously, what's happening is, you know, we've got some short lists out there. Guys aren't willing to move some of these cattle. They're maybe holding them back due to whatever. But at this stage of the game, the packer needs them, and they're going to find them. And it's probably some of your smaller packers. You know, when we hear lightly traded, that's usually an indication that somebody else, a bigger guy, came out and he bought up a lot of the really good cattle, and now the smaller guy has to get out there and really bid up to be able to get what he needs. And so it'll be interesting to see. You know, new contract highs, can't argue about that. We have them. Will we try to go to 141? That'll be the next question, and we'll see once what Box Beef does tomorrow.
I want to talk a little bit about February being just around the corner, and that is the month that we set some pretty important rates for insurance and the like. And I wonder, you're thinking on how we play that this year as a put or other strategies?
Well, I know that you and I have talked before. You know, we played it a long time ago, but I think if you're at this stage of the game, you have to ask yourself. They have what they call short-dated options.
Yes,
I would be in the camp of wanting to get some short-dated options in place. We just don't know what may or may not happen in this market before we get to the end of February. If we can't get supportive exports, that's going to put pressure on the nearbys, which always puts pressure on the deferreds. I think what's happening with the deferreds right now is we are getting a little bit of support with the idea that there are going to be a lot more bean acres planted. And therefore, I think the same thing goes for beans, because we could see beans at $10 at some point in time. I don't know if by the end of February is realistic, but it could happen. So I would be willing to put some money out there on a short-dated option and actually at least give myself a floor, because, boy, you just don't know what the market might throw at you.
Thank you, Jackie.
Oh, thank you, Dave.
Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group, and she is in Champaign, Illinois.
Agricultural market reports on WILL are made possible with support from Busey. Small business is the next big business. So Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Well, good afternoon from Kishwaukee Community College in Malta, Illinois. That's near DeKalb and Sycamore in the northern part of the state. I'm Todd Gleason here with the Corn and Soybean Classics series. We're wrapping up this first week of the series. Of course, last week we had a couple of days that were canceled. We are going to reschedule those. We'll be in Mount Vernon on the 21st, and if you're scheduled to come to Mount Vernon, that's great. Just show up and we'll be glad to have you. If you want to walk in, if you have not scheduled yourself and pre-registered for the Corn and Soybean Classic, that's perfectly fine to go ahead and do walk-ins. We'll be here in Champaign on the 28th of January. Now, this one's a little bit different because if you have not registered and you'd like to pre-register, we'd like you to go ahead and do that. So make this phone call at 217-244-2124. For a couple of other items, don't forget about our trip to John Deere. That's March 10, 11, and 12. You can see it on our website at willag.org. And this is one of the last days, today, tomorrow, maybe Friday, that you can pre-register to go to our Voices of Illinois Agriculture event. Now, I'm urging you today to go online and do it right now. You can do that at willag.org. Look for Voices of Illinois Agriculture. Should be a great evening with Gary Schnitke and Daryl Good, Paul Cooley, Jackie Vake, Steve Freed will be there, Wayne Nelson, Pete Manhart, a whole bunch of folks, and we're raising money for the College of ACES scholarships. It's $100 a plate, Bevere Hall, great evening together on a Friday night, great place to spend an evening with the Voices of Illinois Agriculture. You can call 217-333-7300 for more information on it. Now up next, we'll talk with Farm Management Specialist Gary Schnitke. This week on the Farm Doc Daily website, you'll find an article posted by Farm Management Specialist Gary Schnitke. It takes a look at coverage level choices for revenue protection in 2014 as it relates to crop insurance. Schnitke is of the mind that some producers may very well decide that they'd like to save some premium dollars by reducing their coverage. He took a look at that and wondered whether it really made sense. He explored the topic in his article.
We did look at that issue, and we've seen farmers increasing their coverage level over time. The most used coverage level is now the 85% coverage level. So we've seen farmers bump up to that 85%. I've heard some discussions of lowering that this year because of the lower projected prices. That has to be undertaken with some great deal of caution, though, because we're going to be looking at some lower prices. While we're looking at some lower prices, you know, the guarantees are going to be below cost of production, and as we lower that, we're going to take more and more losses. So as you lower the coverage level, there's more exposure to losses, and this year you might not want to undertake that enterprise because we're going to have lower revenues than we've had in previous years.
You mentioned that producers generally take 85% coverage. That's on the RP, or revenue protection products. That was not always the case historically. When crop insurance first came into being, they started at the lowest levels and then sort of worked their way higher.
Yeah, we've seen farmers increase their coverage levels. And again, back in 1997, there wasn't even 80 and 85% coverage levels. Where we saw a large increase in those high coverage level use was in 2008. Between 2008 and 2009, coverage levels use increased, and 2009 was the first year 80 and 85% coverage levels were used more than 75%. And a lot of that's probably due to higher prices, higher cost, and also enterprise units, which came on board in 2009.
What happens when a producer in this coming year, 2014, to their protection if they back off from 85 to 80%?
Roughly, they expose themselves to $35 more dollars of loss per acre, or the guarantee goes down roughly 35% after taking into consideration what happens on the premium side. So $35 more dollars of losses per acre are possible as you lower the coverage level by 5%.
And that happens with each 5% increment, so from 85 to 80 is 35, from 85 to 75 would be a $70 loss?
It would go from basically $35 from 85 to 80, and it'd be a little bit more, maybe $37 from 80 to 75, and then a bit more. So each one of those goes down. But yeah, if you look at the total, add the two together, and you're pretty close to the total for those.
There will be many that look forward at prices for corn, soybeans in the United States, and think to themselves, well, my average income per acre is going to be much lower. I may as well go ahead and back this off.
Yeah, and again, you're looking at a situation where incomes are down, but costs haven't come down as much. So margins are going to be much more tighter, and even if we have a little bit more variation or downward from what we're expecting on the price side or revenue side, we will see some pretty large losses.
Your recommendations then are to try to hold on to the higher coverage levels?
Hold on to the higher coverage levels and think about an 80 to 85% coverage level if you're using RP. And again, that's particularly critical for those farms with a lot of land that's cash rented at high cash rent levels and those which have high debt to asset ratios.
Other things that they'll need to be thinking about, will they want to use the harvest price option this year?
I would still suggest that the harvest price option's a good alternative, because if we do have a drought, we will have prices above our projected price.
Thank you so much, Gary.
Thanks for having me.
Gary Schnittke, Farm Management Specialist at the University of Illinois. You can always find him online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
And you're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with Cash Grain Analysis is Stephen Linneber of the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. Good afternoon, Stephen.
How we doing, sir?
We are doing well.
Good.
I would expect that with the weather the way it has been in the last several days and ethanol producers offering quick ship, at least they were last week, the lines have been probably forming, yes?
You bet. You bet. Good. A little longer wait seems similar to harvest time right now.
Would you call it a second harvest in terms of what's been coming in the last week?
I would say so. I think it's quickly becoming more of a reality what's really out there for bushels to be bought yet, and a reality of what value it's going to take to get those bushels to move, which with the report on Friday and the spike in the market, I think we found that value where bushels were finally willing to leave the farm.
And so the question is, how much of the work going forward, if futures hangs around this 435 and maybe even dwindles over the next several weeks a little lower, how much of that work will futures do, and how much of the work do you think that the bases will have to do to pry additional acres out of producers' hands?
I think if the market can hold values, which obviously a little more of a difficult value today at the close, futures holds, I think basis, we'll continue to see that value that we've saw the last 2 weeks. We start to see that decrease down back into the 415, 420 levels that we tested pre-report. I think basis has to do the work. I think getting into the positive side of the basis game will definitely become apparent, as it seems that 435 threshold cash money seems to keep bushels moving, and if we can become accustomed to that, basis may have to work a little harder if the futures can't hold up their end of the bargain.
So let's turn our attention then to new cash sales. Where do you think producers are there in your neck of the woods?
Not as better now than we were last Thursday. I think there's certainly been values now that 450 cash seems to be a break-even price, and we have the opportunity to hedge that value in the 460 to 470 range early in the spike in the market after the report. Obviously, guys took advantage of that, but now I see it. Really, we're trying to squeeze as much out of this as we can, and moving forward, I think our next opportunity to do that is, any kind of environmental concerns we see come planting season that might give us another spike. But I still feel the market today feels that enough old corn to deal with, plenty of carry out, and should carry over enough that we won't need a tremendous amount of new corn acres to continue to survive and spite want to, trigger more demand in the market.
Very quickly, then, your prices today.
Cash corn at Clymers, 424. Cash corn at Delphi, 418. Cash beans at Delphi, 1328.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.
That's Stephen Linneber from the Clymers facility of the Andersons. It's National Strawberry Ice Cream Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1785, William Prout was born. An English chemist, he was the first to classify food components into three divisions: carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. In 1863, wood pulp paper was first used in the U.S. for a printed newspaper by the Boston Morning Herald of Boston, Massachusetts. It was a four-page, eight-column newspaper that sold for 3 cents a copy. In 1889, a patent was issued to Daniel Johnson of Kansas City for a rotary dining table for use on ships. The table and attached chairs rotated so that everyone could be served from one spot. In 1919, the Great Molasses Flood occurred. A large 50-foot-high storage tank in Boston burst and sent a tidal wave of over 2 million gallons of molasses traveling at over 30 miles per hour across the city. Houses, buildings, and parts of the elevated rail system were crushed in its path. 21 people died, and over 150 were injured. It took over 6 months to clean up the mess, and the damage was in the millions of dollars. And in 1990, Campbell's Soup produced its 20 billionth can of tomato soup. And that's this day in agricultural history. Listening to the Closing Market Report, this is Dave Dickey. Joining us with a look at agricultural weather is World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner.
It still looks as though South America's forecast will continue quite hostile for crop development in Argentina for the next 3 days, probably taking us into the early part of the weekend. Showers and thunderstorms will begin to erupt over the weekend and continue on into next week. There should be a high enough frequency of potential rain coming up for next week into the following weekend that improvement will likely occur to many of the crop areas across that country. We will not necessarily fully restore soil moisture to normal, but the extreme conditions that are developing across Argentina today into Saturday will likely continue to promote some serious stress and some production cuts in some of the southernmost portions of the production region. While the forecast does bring rain and some relief in the form of cooler temperatures coming up for Argentina as we move through the latter part of the weekend and all of next week, and that will help to turn around some of the crop conditions. In Brazil, of course, weather conditions continue to be almost ideal, and I see no reason for that changing at all over the next couple of weeks either. We'll see some timely rainfall. Yes, maybe a little bit of disruption to the early harvest, but not enough to bring down the production potential across the country or seriously change crop quality. Back here at home across the Midwest, we're still looking at an environment here that's going to be relatively benign. The most unusual weather is in the western half of the country, where no precipitation is expected to fall over the next 7 days, and probably for the second week of the two-week outlook, precipitation will continue to be minimal. By the western United States, I'm literally talking about areas from the western portions of the U.S. plains all the way to the Pacific coast. These areas are still suffering greatly from the lack of precipitation. Snowpack and mountain water equivalencies in the snow are so far below average that many areas will be having to ration their water allocations in the spring and summer if there's not a significant improvement of precipitation across some of those states. This includes the major agricultural areas of both California and the Pacific Northwest. Well, in the heart of the Midwest, we did pick up on some snow across northern portions of the region yesterday. In fact, snow was reported in quite a few locations, but the most significant accumulations were in the north. We do expect to see small disturbances racing across the Midwest over the next week, and each one will likely produce a light amount of precipitation. I am not, at this point in time, looking for any real serious accumulating snows to occur in the lower parts of the Midwest, and temperatures will be on the cooler end of the bias spectrum, at least for the next few days. Some warming will occur late in the weekend and into the early part of next week, while the precipitation bias continues mostly unchanged, with small disturbances passing across the Great Lakes region primarily. We'll look for temperatures across the Midwest today to run mostly in the teens and 20s across a fair amount of the region. We'll also look for temperatures tomorrow afternoon to be similar. The coldest weather coming into the extreme northwestern corner of the region tomorrow, with some single digits in the eastern Dakotas and portions of Minnesota. And low temperatures at night coming up over the next few nights will be coldest in the northwestern portions of the Midwest, in particular eastern Dakotas and Minnesota, where sub-zero degree readings will occur. Some negative teens may occur on Friday morning in portions of Minnesota and some immediate neighboring areas. Negative temperatures will work their way down into central and interior southern Iowa and maybe touch on the northwestern border area of Illinois. This is meteorologist Drew Lerner.
Remember to subscribe to our free Ag e-newsletter. You can do that on our website, willag.org. Simply click on the subscribe link in the right navigation window. This is Dave Dickey.